The combination of President Trump's low approval ratings and off-year election history indicates this fall's congressional election should go very well for Democrats, at least in the U.S. House. Some pundits believe it's likely Democrats will take back the House from the GOP, which currently holds a 241-194 advantage. And the Democratic momentum has even sparked the phrase blue wave to describe just how dramatic the outcome may be. But how likely is a blue wave, and what are the key factors that may lead to it? Joining me from Washington are Bree Payton of The Federalist and Democratic strategist Kevin Walling. Kevin, do you think this blue wave will actually happen, or have you seen any signs recently that Democratic success might be just solid as opposed to overwhelming?
Sure, Steve, you're absolutely right. I'm cautiously optimistic about our November prospects. You know, going back to 1994, we've seen this trend where dozens of seats flip back and forth. We saw 34 seats in 2006, which gave us Nancy Pelosi as Speaker and a return to the Democratic majority. And we saw 64 seats in 2010 flip back to the Republicans just 2 years after Barack Obama was elected. So historical trend lines are on the side of the Democrats heading into November, just based on, you know, recent history, coupled with the performance that we're seeing on the local and ground level. You know, to date, we've seen 40 state legislative seats across the country flip from Republican control to Democratic control. A big win for Doug Jones, obviously, in Alabama. History's on our side, and I think we're seeing that level of engagement like we haven't seen before on the grassroots level.
Bree, it'd be a stunner if the Democrats didn't win a lot of seats. But again, the blue wave concept, does it feel overrated to you or no?
Thus far, a blue wave is happening. And I think there's several reasons as to why it's happening. Number one, the Republican Party isn't really sure what it's about. I mean, going on in West Virginia right now, a state that Donald Trump overwhelmingly won in 2016, two of the candidates who are front runners have been distancing themselves from Mitch McConnell, right? Blankenship has been doing it in a really over the top and very interesting way, shall we say, to put that mildly. But, you know, several of the other candidates have made it clear that they're not sure if they're going to back Mitch McConnell if they were to be voted in the Senate and if the Republicans were to maintain the majority next year. So I definitely think there's a bit of an identity crisis going on. And I also think, you know, the Republicans have had control of the executive branch and both houses of Congress, and they haven't been able to really fulfill the promises that they have been selling to the base, right? Obamacare is still the law of the land. Planned Parenthood is still getting funded. And it's really apparent that they're not at all serious about cutting spending or about fiscal responsibility at all. I mean, just a couple of weeks ago, they passed a $1 trillion omnibus bill, and they've been just doing that ever since they've been in power. So as a conservative who values those things, right, who values fiscal responsibility, who is a pro-life individual, those are the things that I value. And it's clear that the party that's supposed to be representing my interests isn't doing that. Why should I continue to vote for these people?
And that is music to my ears, Bree. I cannot agree more.
Can either party make enough of Donald Trump? And by this, I mean, can the Democrats take advantage of the negatives around him? And can Republicans embrace enough of what he's doing that some conservatives like in order to stop the blue wave a little bit? He does have a very, very loyal base. Will that protect him in some states and protect some Republicans in some states?
You know, that's a great point, Stephen. You know, I think we're seeing, as Bree rightly just pointed out, in West Virginia, the primaries that are going on there, Ohio, in other places, we're seeing those candidates running towards the president in those primaries in order to be successful and capture enough of that base to get them through that primary. And I think that's actually going to be somewhat dangerous when it comes to the general election in terms of policies that they're ascribing to now running towards the president. We don't know a year from now or heading into November where the president's favorabilities are going to be. Rightly, as you rightly point out, Steve, they've been underwater for a long time, and that's certainly a drain on the generic ballot as we're seeing Democrats overperform in these special elections and things like that. It may be a little too early to tell because actually, surprisingly, the president's numbers have been up, you know, and now he's around 40. So as that base coalesces, as voters are engaging in these midterm elections, as candidates are speaking to that base in order to be successful in that primary, again, I think it's going to be interesting to see the dynamics headed into the general with promises made during the primary election.
So, Bree, how important and yet how dangerous is the president to the GOP trying to retain the House?
I do think, to push back a little bit on Kevin's point, I do think that Democrats have to be careful when they are hitting Donald Trump, right? I mean, we are, for them to maintain, to gain the Senate majority, they would have to gain seats in several states where Donald Trump was overwhelmingly popular in the past 2016 election, right?
And so, still is in many of those states.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like in West Virginia, that's what we're looking at right now.
Yeah.
So I think that they're going to have to thread this really careful needle in the sense that, okay, we're going to do better for you than this guy that you voted for, you know, last time around. And to me, I think seeing a lot of the Democrats double down on the identity politics and double down on, oh, you know, everyone that voted for Donald Trump is a bunch of icky racists, which is what has been, you know, proceeding in the past couple of elections that we've seen in Alabama, that we've seen in Virginia, some of these other states, that kind of sentiment towards Donald Trump voters, I think is something that they should back away from and be a little bit more careful about. And I think that Democrats should capitalize on, hey, Republicans have, you know, had control of these three aspects of government, and what have they done for you?
Bree, let me start with you on this one. So we're talking about getting more people maybe inspired, maybe to go to the polls. It's an off-year election, though. Are we going to see influence of millennial voters, of younger voters who made an impact in Obama winning the presidency, seem to make an impact in making Bernie Sanders a factor? Is that going to be a factor in this case? Are we going to see Dems getting out the vote in that case? Are we going to see younger voters kind of turned off?
Millennials overwhelmingly do not like Donald Trump. They do tend to lean liberal, you know, in a number of areas. So I do think Democrats certainly hold an advantage when it comes to those things. And I think, again, this is a shortcoming of the Republican Party. The Republican Party has not learned how to message to young individuals. You know, if I was a Republican seeking to gain support from millennials, I would message upon the basis of being pro-life and would message upon the basis of, hey, let's pull back some of the federal funding, some of the overwhelming federal involvement in higher education that's driving up the cost of your tuition, that's driving up and spurring student loans. Like, I think this generation is so ripe for Republicans to pick, and the fact that they're not even trying, again, shows you some of the problems with the Republican Party.
If there is a major switch and a major shift and the blue wave actually happens, is it going to be because there's a positive message where people are excited about what the Democrats are bringing, or more because they just don't like what Donald Trump and the Republicans are doing?
I think Democrats have certainly made a point to be more negative than they have been positive, right? Like, overwhelmingly, at least to me, it seems that they're positioning themselves as the party that is anti-Trump, as the party that is opposed to all of the icky racists that voted for Donald Trump last November, right? And I think, to me personally, that message turns me off. And I think it probably turns off a lot of other voters as well. And, you know, I do think, as evidenced by Donald Trump's rise to the Oval Office in 2016, there are a lot of people out there who are open to economically liberal messages. And I think that Democrats could do themselves a favor by capitalizing on that and saying, here's what, I mean, to me personally, I hate that, but there are a lot of people who like it. And I think just strategically, they could be saying, here's what we could do for you. You know, Republicans push this tax cut. Here's what we would do instead that would help you out specifically, give you a little bit of some breathing room economically. I think there are a lot of Americans who are open to that message, and I think it would serve themselves to spur that and to continue that economic message. And I don't really see them doing that so much as they could be.
I think Bree needs to get a job advising Democrats running for office, because that's spot on. I mean, I agree that, you know, on the local level, you know, congressional elections are inherently local elections, right? And I think you're seeing successful Democrats on the campaign trail talking up an economic opportunity message, whether it be Medicare for all in some districts, kind of tapping into the Bernie enthusiasm, whether it be talking about infrastructure investments, education investments, what have you. I think that's how we're going to be successful, is localizing these elections, not really talking about Donald Trump on the local level. That is not going to be a successful effort in our case. But the key thing for us is really talking about communities. We saw it on hand, you know, in Virginia during the the offset elections in 2017. We almost took back the House of Delegates, an 11-seat flip, by focusing on local issues like traffic, like potholes, those kinds of things that people actually care about. And we can see that being replicated across the board in these key congressional districts, with the Democrats focusing on those local issues rather than a narrative against Donald Trump.
Guys, let me close with this one. And I know you, neither one of you is someone who has the map out and you're putting your push pins in it, so I'm not holding you to this.
I've got my map out. I got pins.
Kevin does. He literally has like a
Sharpie.
Stack of papers.
I got a Sharpie. I got states. I got districts. I'm ready for you, Steve.
I stand corrected. All right. So, Kevin, do you think the Democrats are going to win enough seats to take the House and Senate, either, neither, both? And then yeah. Bree after Kevin.
So I think that obviously, as most people have talked about, the House is much more in play, just based on historic trends that you talked about at the outset, Steve. I think we'll pick up anywhere between, I'm hopeful, anywhere between 30 and 40 seats. But again, these elections are going to be, some of them are going to be razor thin, like the Connor Lamb election. The Senate is a much more difficult uphill battle, just based on the number of seats we're defending that are in traditionally Republican states like North Dakota, West Virginia, other competitive states like Wisconsin. Johnson with Tammy Baldwin and Florida with Governor Rick Scott getting in the race. So the Senate is a much more uphill battle. I think we're going to make some inroads there in the Senate, but certainly take the House.
I think the House is definitely much more in play. And you know what? I don't even care. No, I'm serious, because listen, all of the names of the individuals that are being floated for Speaker to succeed Paul Ryan are, again, just leadership ninnies who do not care about fiscal responsibility, who are not going to prioritize, you know, getting rid of Obamacare, who are not going to prioritizing defunding Planned Parenthood, which is what they've been promising that they will do for, like, ever since I can remember.
I think Bree's going to announce her run as a Democrat for Congress on this show, Steve.
I think the Senate is going to be much, as Kevin said, much more of an uphill battle, just because looking at sheer numbers, Democrats are going to have to retain all of the seats that they already have, and they're going to have to gain several seats in states that overwhelmingly favored Trump over Hillary in November, and that's going to be really tough.
Bree Payton of The Federalist and Democratic campaign strategist Kevin Walling. Guys, thanks for the conversation.
Thank you,
Steve.
Thank
you.